6'6" above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard.
Hello and welcome to A Public Affair. It's Tuesday, so that means you've got me. I'm Carousel Baird. So let's get started. We've got Chris Taylor on the phone. Representative Taylor, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Hello, Chris. We're always a joy to have you.
Thank you.
Well, tell us a little bit about it. It's been quite a rocky time. Lots of lowlights going on, but also lots of things that, you know, it's really exciting to see the news conferences and the press releases and to hear about all the things that you are affirmatively moving forward. Some succeed, some don't, but nevertheless, you are moving initiatives forward. You are having conversations. Talk a little bit to us about the lowlights and the highlights of the past session.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think one of the big themes and the real problems that I see in this Republican-controlled legislature is that they don't appear to be listening to the people of Wisconsin. You know, that's what I really experienced first and foremost on the budget committee when we went all around the state, and people, thousands of people from all corners of the state came out to say what they wanted in a budget. And what we heard from that process was people wanted us to invest in our public education system. They wanted us to invest in our local neighborhood K-12 schools. They wanted us to invest in UW. They wanted us to support our long-term care system, not blow it up like the governor did. And so really at the end of the day, what I saw constantly throughout this legislative session was that the majority party simply has closed their ears to the people of the state of Wisconsin, and they seemed, frankly, to care more about protecting their own jobs than actually creating the family-supporting jobs that our state so desperately needs. So I saw that first with the budget. Frankly, that was one of the worst things that passed. That was one of the worst bills that passed this year, in my opinion, was the state budget that did the opposite of what the people of the state wanted us to do.
Chris, let me ask you a question. How much do you think this is all prefabricated? I mean, they just sort of decide this is what we're doing and they move forward. I mean, on every level, a legislator has to, you know, come up with their own agenda and their vision. But it seems nonstop, especially over the past 2 years, where we're talking about such an expansive amount of time, that they just go forward with their agenda regardless. Outcry, emotion is irrelevant. Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, you could not listen to the people who came out, the thousands of people who came out to the budget hearings. Nobody was saying don't invest in our public schools. Nobody was saying blow up our long-term care system. Nobody was saying gut the DNR and take science out of the management of our resources. Nobody was saying gut our open records laws. And thankfully, that initiative was turned back because there was such public outcry. But nobody was saying do the things in the budget that were actually done. Nobody was saying expand taxpayer money going to private schools, and that is exactly what happened. You know, at the end of the day, the people who were most shortchanged, in my opinion, were our children, and those are the people we should be investing in because that's the future of our state. So the budget was extremely problematic, did not reflect the priorities of the people of the state, really was a special interest giveaway, in my opinion. You know, so that was one of the things I think that was most problematic. And then you can move on to looking at the attack on women and the attack on women's health that occurred this session, specifically targeting Planned Parenthood, the largest and oldest family planning provider, real efforts to just shut down women's access, low-income women's access to life-saving cervical and breast cancer screenings, access to birth control, some horrible, horrible bills that were passed that really try to erect so many obstacles on women's path to just getting the health care that we need to be healthy. So that was another real, real problem.
Do you think that there's going to be some push? Sorry to interrupt. Do you think there's going to be some pushback at some point once these policies really come into place and people realize the lack of access that the community is going to have to healthcare, and the destruction that they're really going to feel of how bad our public schools are going to get? Is there hope that hopefully in a couple of years there's going to be this reaction and this fear?
Well, look, in the area of public education, the pushback was real strong. We had superintendents from the most conservative school districts come out saying, please supply us with an adequate, stable funding base. Please, you know, invest in our students. Please don't divert money from us to private schools, which is exactly what happened. So there was an extremely strong pushback from schools, school districts, parents, educators, superintendents, and still the Republican majority did the opposite. So, you know, if there's a time to push back and a time for voters to really reflect their dissatisfaction with these horrible policies that do not serve our state, it's, you know, we have an election coming up in April. We have an election coming up in November. So I am hoping that these horrible actions that just hurt our kids, that hurt our universities, hurt our economics. Employers are telling us repeatedly they need people in the workforce who can think. They need people who have critical reasoning skills. They need people who are well-educated. And yet what I see from the Republican majority is just a constant attack on public education, which is the thing we should be investing in. So I am hoping, Carousel, that we will see the people of the state really rise up and say, these are not the policies.
And tell me about some of the highlights. I want to sort of cover the whole picture. Tell me some of the things that you have been working on, and I know we're going to have Representative Rob Call joining us in a few minutes, and I'm excited to. It's exciting sometimes we don't get to hear the details of what our legislators are really doing at the Capitol. Tell me about all the different things you're moving forward.
Right, and I think it's super important, Carousel. I'm so glad you asked about it, because oftentimes, you know, I talk a lot about what I don't want. It's also important for me to talk about, this is what I think the people I represent want. Mm-hmm. So I work on all kinds of policies. I did a Wisconsin Bill of Rights. I know it's not going to pass, but it's the vision that I have and my constituents have for a state where people are truly the center of government and truly have personal liberties and individual freedoms that can't be taken away. But I think one of the bills I worked on that I'm proudest of was a bill called Safe at Home, and it did pass. It is going to become law. It establishes an address confidentiality program for victims of domestic violence, human trafficking, and sexual assault. It allows them to keep a new address confidential. And it basically directs the Department of Justice to establish a P.O. box system that victims can come, they can apply to get in the program and get a P.O. box. So they don't have to worry about disclosing their address when they're registering their children for school or, you know, signing up for a utility, paying their bills, whatever it may be. And that was a really important bill. We were really kind of lagging behind the whole nation. 34 other states have this program. It's been incredibly successful in helping shield victims of horrible violence from their abusers. And, you know, I was proud that did pass, and it was a very interesting collection of legislators.
It had bipartisan support.
Total bipartisan support. It was unanimous. So, you know, it was brought forward by myself and Joel Clayfish, who I, you know, don't agree with a lot of the time.
He's not always our favorite, no.
Yeah, but, you know, he's willing to listen, and he is willing to consider, and he did that with his bill. And then Senator Fitzgerald in the Senate, and, of course, Jen Schilling, who is the minority leader. So it's a great kind of collaborative effort, and it does show what we can do when we work together. We actually can pass really good policies.
And you also did some bills, I know, some proposals on child safety rules and car seats.
Right. Yeah, that was another bill. We're still hoping that gets through the Senate. That bill basically changed the age under which infants have to be in rear-facing car seats. It raises it to 2. That's what the medical evidence.
The data has evolved so much, yes.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's pediatricians are telling parents, keep your infants in rear-facing car seats until they're age 2. And we have the state Department of Transportation saying 1. Age 1. So there's a lot of confusion out there. This bill just clarifies it is 2. They're, you know, all children can fit in a rear-facing car seat who are two and under. There's ways to do it. Sometimes parents get intimidated that, oh, my child's so big. But there are ways to do it. It's so much safer. If you're in an accident, a serious accident, your child has a much greater likelihood of surviving if they're rear-facing. So it's really about the health and safety of infants. We are hoping that that can get through Senate. We're hitting some roadblocks there, but we're continuing to kind of move forward with that.
Well, Chris, I want to thank you so much for just finding a few moments to connect with us, especially during Pledge Week. It's so important to hear from you and to know the role that WORT can play in making sure we help get the word out of the great work that you're doing and the struggles that you're facing on the state legislative level.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And everyone, please support WORT. You guys do such a great job of reporting what actually is happening here in the Capitol.
Oh, yes.
I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much, State Representative Chris Taylor.
Thank you.
Have a great day. And now we're gonna line them up back to back. We have State Representative Rob Call. Rob, are you on the line with us?
I am. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Rob. And I am... We've never had you on the show, and that is my amiss. You're an excellent representative representing Dane County. We need to get you more often, and I'm excited to have you today. Can you tell us a little bit about trying to sort of look at a wrap-up of you guys? The Assembly have just completed your session. You're in adjournment right now. Of course, you can always go back. But tell us a little bit about, from your vision, the highlights and the lowlights that have happened this past session.
Well, and I heard some of Chris's comments, and so I'm going to echo some of that. I mean, I've been doing a lot of into session interviews, and you know, basically, in a nutshell, if you are the middle class, a student either in our K-12 public system or UW system, a parent of that student, or somebody in local government, this was really not a great session for you, because what we saw was, unfortunately, repeated attacks on our school system, our local government, and little attention to our jobs crisis in this state. And it doesn't give me any pleasure to say that. It doesn't give any of my colleagues pleasure to say that. We do all want to try to get things done when we run for these offices, and regardless if you're in the majority or minority party, obviously prefer to be in the majority party, but we'd really like to have a better direction for this state, especially when you look at a neighboring state like Minnesota, where they're sitting on a $2 billion surplus, and we're in just the opposite situation. You know, it's clear to us that the approach of the majority party, the Republicans, has been to cut, put money in the 1%, and then it'll all trickle down to everybody else.
Well, just doesn't work that way.
That hasn't happened.
No.
It just doesn't work that way. And we've had, in the last 4 or 5 years, $1 billion of cut from our K-12 system. The last week we were in session, they cut another $14 million under AB 751, which is really a bill to address an issue in Racine that was created by the Speaker himself. And then in the budget, we're going to divert another $800 million over the next decade from public education. So that's 1.8, if you're keeping track of the arithmetic at home, that in a span of about 15 years that we're diverting away from public education into private unaccountable voucher schools or just simply cutting. And that's a multifold problem for us, because this is educating our children. This is the next generation that's going to fill the jobs and you know, obviously provide that tax base for all of us that want to retire at some point in time. But it's just a quality of life issue, too. As I've talked more and more with realtors around the area, you know, one of the main thing that people are looking for, that they love about Dane County when they're looking for a home, is our quality
public
educational
schools.
System. Whether it's Madison or Monona Grove, McFarland, you know, all these places.
There's lots
around
of great
here.
Districts, right?
There's great, yeah, and everybody has been very benefiting from that from a local government standpoint. You've got a lot of desirable communities because of the school districts. I'm afraid, as a parent of four young children, that's not going to be the case a decade down the road. That we are systematically dismantling our school systems. And those are things you can't just easily recover from, even if you switch the governor in a few years. It's going to take time, because the hole they've been digging is so enormous now, and the path they've put us on is one that it's going to be difficult to change the direction overnight. Same for the UW system. I mean, when you cut, I think in the last budget, cut another $250 million, $94 million from UW-Madison alone, which is our, you know, flagship catalyst university, obviously in our backyard here in Dane County. we're losing professors left and right. We're losing students. The graduate students are deciding this isn't where they want to be. And for somebody like myself with a district where I've got a lot of great businesses that have benefited from UW, like ProMega as an example, when you make those cuts and you send the signal to the not just the country but the world that we're not interested in scientific advancement in the Wisconsin idea, you really are putting out that signal that this isn't the place to come. And all these advancements we've made, be it stem cells or otherwise, turn into patents for us through WHARF. They spin off into startups, create high-paying jobs, not just for this area, but for the entire state. And we're really, I fear we're on the brink of going down a disastrous path that we've already started taking steps down towards. And I don't know that my colleagues across the aisle even understand some of the things they're doing to the UW system and our K-12 system. And that's really been the low light for me. That and some of the, there's been over 100-plus bills attacking local control. You are somebody who's in local government. I myself was in local government before doing this position. And for a party, the Republican Party, that used to say they were all about local control, I think they're shown by their actions they're anything but.
No.
And it's very discerning, discouraging to me, and because I'm really fearful that it's already tough enough to get people to want to serve in local office. Mm-hmm. Well, if you tell them you have no authority because we've taken all the decisions away from
and
you.
And no funding to do anything.
And no funding to do anything. Right. It's going to be tougher to get people to do these jobs. And those are the jobs that it has the greatest impact on people's lives. That school board member, that county board member, that city council member, they have more of an impact on people's lives, or they have historically, than people in my position or in mm-hmm. Congress. But we really are squarely put them in the target here for the Republicans and decided that they aren't worthy to be trusted. And I disagree completely. I think people like you serving on the county board deserve to have that autonomy and that ability to do your job, and the funding partnership needs to be met by the state, and we're just not doing that right now.
How bad do you think it needs to get to before the constituents, the citizens in the state of Wisconsin feel it and realize it? I mean, you and I talk about government because this is what we do, but of course there's thousands, tens of hundreds of thousands of people that they don't think about this and they're trusting the elected leaders to do the right thing. How bad is it going to have to get before they realize that they're not doing the right thing?
Well, I think it's starting to sink in a little bit when you've got more than 10,000 layoff notices in 2015, far eclipsing previous numbers. And unfortunately, a lot of that right here in Dane County with Oscar Mayer and others. Mm-hmm. We're 37th in the nation in private sector job growth, dead last in the Midwest, dead last in new business startups. Our middle class is shrinking faster than any other state, and that's Pew Charitable Trust. A lot of this is just stats from the federal government and nonpartisan research boards. I think people are starting to notice. Part of the thing with I've talked about with public schools, people really haven't noticed because our school boards, our teachers, et cetera, have done such a great job of dealing with the situation. But
there's
I don't think they can
point.
Deal with it anymore. There's a breaking point. I know in Madison, obviously, just had Madison School District had a referendum last year. Monona Groves has one this year. McFarland, I'm just talking about ones in my district.
And there's still
it's
never
not
enough.
Funding our education. No, my, it's never enough.
My daughter's school is one of the schools that benefited from the referendum. And I was at a meeting this morning where we were talking about, well, the referendum didn't cover that. And it didn't. But we already are asking for more. And we're one of the schools getting a benefit from the referendum that just passed. It's never enough.
We're reaching a constitutional crisis because we're supposed to provide this fair public education, fair and equal, under the Constitution. And when you have 60% of the districts passing referendum, that means 40 are not. Mm. And how is that child in that district that repeatedly is unable to pass a referendum, how are they getting an equal education compared to some most referendums in Dane County pass? So we have a crisis coming that somebody eventually is going to challenge, and they should, because we're not doing our job at the state level on many fronts. Funding public education, funding infrastructure, which is not just building Verona Road or Beltline repairs. It's getting money to counties so on days like this they can get the snow off the road in a timely fashion. Mm. And we're not doing our job there either. And so I think people, to get back to that question, are starting to notice. The concern we always have is they'll notice, and they've noticed the last couple of elections when it comes to the assembly, where there's 99 seats, we're outnumbered 63 to 36, yet in both the last couple of elections, I think we've garnered about 150 or 200,000 or even more votes than Republicans.
Mm.
But the way they've drawn the lines,
so
because of gerrymandering, yeah, it's so, I know people are hearing us, they're getting the message, so forth, but we have that other hurdle to get over of the lines they've artfully drawn. I give them credit. They brought in the professionals, make it very difficult. Now, the Senate, I think, has a good shot at this election. And then, obviously, you can't gerrymander a statewide race.
Right.
And so, but we
That's
have to wait for the governor's
is.
Race.
Well, but they can impact it with voter ID. So, Robin,
yes. Yeah, they can.
And a final minute here with you. Talk to me about some of the great things that you have been working on. I know you've been a leader on job initiatives. You mentioned sort of stem cell and trying to make mm-hmm. sure that there's research and funding to support the jobs that come out of that. Tell us about that.
Well, a bill I've introduced two sessions in a row now is the Next Generation Jobs Act, which is really focused on the bioscience industry and a partnership between UW and business, where it would take no taxpayer dollars. It's really the new income derived from the industry through job growth that we put right back into it through the tax system. The Wisconsin Technology Council, the bioscience industry, they all love this bill. Obviously, it's hit a roadblock because one of the areas it addresses is advancements in stem cell. And so, unfortunately, while it's been introduced, it got nowhere. We did expand upon the cannabidiol CBD bill for treatment. Obviously, my colleagues and I would rather do a full-fledged medical marijuana at a minimum, but this is where we can get right now with the current leadership. We've passed a trailer bill this session, bipartisan. We need to get it through the Senate that will make it easier to get this medicine in the hands of the families that need it. I worked with the IBEW and firefighters to do a safety bill when they work on solar projects, et cetera, that are done by third parties or individual homeowners, which we want to encourage, but we want to make sure those firefighters and electrical workers are safe when they go out and take
new
care
technology.
Of those systems. So, you know, there's those things, but when you're in the minority, a lot of it is just fighting the fetal tissue bill, because that relates to my Next Generation Jobs Act, but I can't get anywhere if they pass a fetal tissue bill that restricts the ability to do stem cell research mm-hmm. and the businesses that can grow from that. It's fighting, in my district, there was a bill that came out with regards to destruction of effigy mounds. And so working behind the scenes to kill that bill, at least.
Right. It didn't even get a public hearing, so that's a good statement.
No, but they're telling us they're going to do a study committee this summer because they want to bring it back next year. So the fight isn't over. You were at a hearing, I saw you, Carousel.
Yes.
About mandatory
the
insurance.
Driver's license bills.
Driver's
yes.
It sounds good on paper when you say, well,
that's
everybody has a license
idea.
Needs to have insurance. But the people that don't have the insurance, it's because they can't afford it. And if you're
right.
going to take away their license, guess what? You take away their job.
Right. Then
and
they'll never be able to afford it.
No, they're never going to be able to afford it.
Right.
And so we did stop that at the committee level, but they'll keep coming back on these things. But those are the kind of things when you're in the minority, a lot of times it's just fighting behind the scenes, fighting publicly at the hearings and through the press, but behind the scenes with interest groups to get those things killed. While you still plug away, I'm working on an autonomous vehicle bill. Google's got billions of dollars they want to invest, so does GMC. UW-Madison professors came to me because they knew I could work across the aisle. I think it'll be one of the first bills we get out next session. We're trying to actually work with the Board of Regents to do some on-campus testing right now. But this technology is already here. I mean, anybody's got a newer car, a lot of them parallel park themselves.
Right.
They'll stop automatically if
they
you get too close to something
things.
In front of you.
That'd be wonderful.
It's coming. Let's go out and not be the 50th state to pass a law. Let's be one of the first 10 or 15 and partner with people like companies like Google and get some of those investment dollars in our state. But those are things that don't get an initial positive response from Republicans. They need time to digest it.
Mm.
You know, driverless cars, as they admitted to me, it scares them. And I, so,
well,
you know, but as I joked with them, I said, well, some of you, I've seen you drive.
Yeah,
you take out
the human error out of that. Well, we're out of time. I appreciate you so much for joining us. And State Representative Rob Call, the first time I've had you on my show, I say that so I can shame myself a little bit because clearly we need to have you on again. And maybe we can have you in the near future when you introduce this new bill to talk about it and destigmatize the fear that may exist with some of our listeners even.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great. It's a new subject. It's a little scary, but I think everybody's gonna once they hear more about it, UW is at the forefront. It's an exciting topic.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for the efforts and the fighting that you are doing at the state capitol. It doesn't go unnoticed. We really appreciate your leadership.
And I want to thank you and encourage your listeners to certainly support everything you guys are doing. You're vital to the conversation.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Carousel.
State Representative Rob Call. Let me formally, appropriately introduce you now, Dean Loomis. He's the Executive Director of Housing Initiatives. He's been there for 20 years. You need to update your bio, Dean. Prior to that, you were a community organizer and a homeless outreach worker. You're also a board member, as you've said, on the Madison Metropolitan School District, a local elected official. So
I'm running for re-election,
you
too.
You are.
You still got to vote, even though
yes,
I already won.
Keep voting. Well, yeah. I'm on the ballot, too. Yeah. We're so fabulous, no one runs against
which
us.
Which is one of the things that Representative Carl was talking about.
Good and bad. Good and bad.
We're on there.
But here we are.
Yep.
So, next week, March 8th and March 9th, there's going to be a charrette. You're going to help explain to us what a charrette is, but basically a community planning meeting to talk about how to address homelessness and how to end homelessness in Madison and Dane County. Tell us a little bit about that event.
This is actually a formal process that is required by every community in the country. 10 years ago, we had to create a 10-year plan to end homelessness, and it worked so good that we're back at it again to redo it because we didn't make it. So this year, HUD put out a requirement to review that plan, redo it. They gave every community a certain time to do it in, and now we're going to have to review that plan and then make a new one. Next Tuesday and Wednesday at the Lakeview Church on Mandrake, right off of Northport.
Yep.
There's going to be what's called a charrette. What it is a special format that we actually hired some consultants to come. HUD gave us some money to do this thing and do it properly, so we hired a tech support program that's going to come and do these things, and they've been doing them all around the country. Tuesday, the format is that you get several people that are kind of experts in this field. They sit in the middle, and then the format is that people sit all around them. So the group in the middle is called You're in a Fishbowl. And then they talk for a while, and then at the end, the community has an opportunity to make some comments or ask some questions.
So who's attending these? Is this open to the
open
public?
Open community, absolutely.
It's during the day, though, Monday.
Yes.
Monday and Tuesday. So
yeah.
Are you expecting? I mean, well, it's also
we
important
we
to
figure,
have a dialogue.
We're planning on 200.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we have lunch. We'll have, water, coffee, stuff like that.
I mean, there's a lot of merit to having all the community organizations and groups that work on housing initiatives to be in the same space at once to have this concrete conversation.
Right. There are over 40 organizations working on homeless issues, from support in all kinds of areas to housing development and service support, clinical support, a whole wide range, which is pretty comprehensive. So let me give you an example of some of the groups. At 10 o'clock on Tuesday, the first group is going to be around the collaborative efforts between mainstream service providers and faith-based organizations.
Mm.
So that is one. If you have a particular interest in that, come to that one. Second one, which will start at 1:15, is how can you develop shelter that leads towards permanent housing? So that's one that we all hear about all the time, the condition of the shelters. It's probably the hardest job in the whole homeless consortium of services is running a shelter. It's very, very difficult.
Can I ask you a quick question about that? So what is the role of a shelter? Is the role of a shelter just to temporarily house someone because we don't want them freezing to death or starving to death or whatever it is? And those are exaggerated statements, but those are real. People are dying on the streets. And you need them to be somewhere emergency right now.
Yes, yes.
But then
it's safety.
Yes.
Really, at night it's safety. We have to get people. But then once you're there, we can identify them. Who are you? What happened?
How do we turn that into the next step?
How did this happen to you?
So you don't. Yes. So they don't just walk out the next day exactly where they were the day before. They walk out the next day with more resources to move along in the process.
Yes. And there's a whole range of people that are working there. Some of them are working. This is ridiculous. There's someone that has a job can't find housing, which is another issue that the charrette is going to come.
Okay.
To deal with. The last one on Tuesday is how do we become a housing-first community? Housing First, man.
You've heard about it for 2 years.
Define what is
housing
it?
First. Yes.
How do you do
Tell
this?
Us, Dean.
And it's three. There's really three components. One is you have to have aggressive, not assertive, aggressive outreach workers that go to the shelters, goes out under the bridges, goes out where people are sleeping, knocks on their doors when they find them in cars, and develops that relationship with them. Nobody, and don't believe people say, well, this is their choice, they like to live like that. Nobody likes to live like that. No one ever turns down services. No one wants, everybody wants services. Sometimes, because of their mental health status, they get real confused and it's very hard to work with. They get paranoid, they got PTSD, they'll run away from you.
Well, and sometimes people have a history. They wish they don't trust the system because they've been abused, literally
it's
and
really
figuratively.
Difficult. Aggressive and very savvy outreach workers finally develop that relationship and break those barriers down. And then the second part of what a Housing First community is you got to have units to take them to. I'm ready to go. Then where's the unit?
Do we have enough available housing?
No, absolutely not.
No.
That's another one we got to talk about. And the third one is once you get them there, it's Housing First. The concern is that they don't have to agree to get services to get into the housing. You just go in there and get it. So those are the three that are happening on Tuesday. Collaborative efforts between mainstream services and faith-based organizations. How can we develop shelter to housing a little bit more efficiently? And then what is Housing First and how do you become that? So that happens on the first day, 10 o'clock, 1:15, and 3:10. If you want to stay for all that, great. If you don't, you can come to the one you like. The second day starts at 10 o'clock, and the first one is how do we best serve homeless youth? Now, I'm on the school board. Almost 4% of all of our students that come to MMSD, of our 27,000 students, 4% are homeless. That's about 1,000. Last year, it was 1,484.
That's terrifying. 1,000. How big that number is.
1,484.
If you are involved in the public schools, I have children in the public schools, your children, your family is touched by homelessness.
Yeah, and then not only that, there's unaccompanied youth. As they age and whatever happened in their families
and
fall
their
apart, we've got students
go.
Living on their own right now, that 16 and up group. So there's going to be a lot of discussion about what's happening there. And I can tell you right now that of the group that gets the least amount of service and always falls in the gaps is the 16 to 22-year-olds. That's the biggest gap in every community, and we have to resolve that one. So that'll be the first one. Got a lot of good people that can come and talk about what can be done, what's being done now, and what we should be doing.
Yeah, tell me about that for a second. And all these scenarios that you're laying out for us, and you told us a little bit about the fishbowl process, it's going to be people talking about, here's the problem, brainstorming the solution, but are they also offering sort of innovative, here are what other community, give us some idea and vision
some
of
good
what
people.
Options are.
Yeah, we picked some good people to come to this. And
there's sort of experts in every group.
It's also going to be, there's a theme running through all of this, and that's going to end up with the last one.
Okay.
The second one on Wednesday, 1:15, is diversion and prevention. How can you stop someone getting homeless before it happens?
Wouldn't that be ideal?
Now, one thing you should all be aware of is that family housing and family homelessness is almost always due to domestic abuse issues. So there's a lot of opportunities to work with that group and getting right, either keep them back in their housing, resolving that issue of the abuse issues, or get them back in housing real quick.
How important is that? And does it get... you and I, as we've said, both work in local government. As we've had this whole conversation today, we're underfunded. There's never enough money to do anything. And because of that, you solve the crisis first. You put out the fire. You address the person that is already homeless. And how big of a deal are we missing when we're not addressing people that are on the verge of homelessness and how much easier it is and how much trauma you will save from their personal life if they don't fall into the deep end?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the issues that once you get on a board, school board or a county board, you too often find yourself having to react instead of having the opportunity to fund proactive programs and get out in front of it to eliminate this stuff. So
yes.
We really have to think differently. And policymakers right now are all about reacting. They're all about letting people get out there, fend for themselves, and let them just flounder around.
That's what the state is giving us.
Privatize stuff.
That's all we get to
do. Here's what we're going to do now. You got to react to us. Figure it all out. You're on your own. And somehow in their mind, they're thinking that's working together. And really what it is to say, you're on your own over there. So diversion and prevention is really being up front, out in front of the problems, and trying to create programs that will work with on that end. It's difficult, but it can be done. Now, the last one is probably, this is the one at 3:10 on Wednesday. We're going to talk about affordable housing development and common goals. And in that group, I'm going to be actually in that one talking about affordable housing development. I believe Steve Schooler is going to join us. But we're also invited people there that are going to talk about community will, developing community will, which
mm-hmm.
is essentially advocacy.
Advocacy
at the highest levels and local levels. And we have been able in Madison and Dane County to be able to do that. Dane County offered up an affordable housing trust fund program last year, and in the next 3 years, they're going to be able to put $2 million a year into affordable housing development. The city, through a program called tax credits, is offering developing properties that right now will be, in the next several months, will be opening up a 60-unit building off of East Wash, about 3,400 East Wash, off a street called Rethke.
That will help
60.
That had a lot of. I know the county was part of that project. Private.
County put
private entity put some funding in. It was a big, what you're talking about, getting everyone
just
in together.
Just happens to be next to a building that Housing Initiatives own. So we're going to have a nice little community there. These programs, when run well with best practices, increase property values. So, and the city, through their these tax credit programs, and are going to do another one on the west side for families starting next year. We've got some because of advocacy, because of local pressure, because of politics, we were able to put money where it needs to go into affordable housing development. So that is the layout of the whole plan.
That
it's next Tuesday and Wednesday.
Tuesday and Wednesday, and I am hoping to be there for part of it. So I'm really excited about that.
You don't have to come for all of them.
No.
Figure out which one you like.
But we can be there for part of it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dean.
Yeah, we got to end this with we got a little five minutes left.
Making sure I'm giving you the credit. Yeah. We're talking with Dean Loomis, the Executive Director of Housing Initiatives, about the upcoming community event, Charette's.
And let's see, if you want more information, you can call my office, 277-8330.
I want to have you on in the future because I want to hear what comes out of this, right?
Okay.
And the movement that we make in the future.
That's the last part. On Friday at 8:30 in the morning at
the final
Villager Mall, the group with the lead group that puts it together comes together and redoes the plan.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be a brand new plan.
To address homelessness in Dane County.
And this is about ending this thing. There is a national goal to end.
Because you got to be aggressive.
And there is a national goal to end veteran homelessness this year, which I think we can hit.
Well,
so we're close.
This is fabulous. Thank you so much for all your work on that. Thank you, everyone.